All right, 2 minutes of meditation.
So this one's called writing. A deviation of a hair's breadth at the center leads to an error of 100 miles at the rim. When the effort is so slight, why should you hesitate to set things right? There are many people who endeavor to know spirit, and the greatest sincerity, they take music lessons, read scripture, learn foreign languages, study nutrition, change their dress, and go to temples, all in the hopes that they will reach spirit. Sadly, they miss it by a hair's breadth. For a person to awaken to spirit, someone must give them a spark. Perhaps this is what is called direct transmission. It is odd, but this is the only way that knowledge of spirit is passed on. Book knowledge can help and give one a deep theoretical background, but the true understanding of spirit comes person to person. There is no other way. So if you have any true understanding of spirit, you got it from someone. If you meet someone else who needs that spark and you are in the possession of it, you give it to them. Don't be selfish. There are so many people out there who want guidance and who cannot get it. If you can make a difference for at least one person, then you have tremendous merit indeed. I know for a fact that the majority of you sitting in this room think that there's nothing about your experience or existence that could possibly be worthwhile to somebody else. Therefore, I know you guys tell me that sponsorship's important, and it's probably the only way that I'm going to stay clean and sober. But I don't have anything to offer. I believe that. I used to believe that when the Ninth Step promises were read, when it says we will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. I didn't believe it. I thought, you know, the bankruptcy, the failed business, the foreclosures, the lost wife, the kids that I don't get to see, all the other goofy stuff that I had going on in my life, that's no use to anyone. And then, SEC Championship weekend 2011 comes along. I'm a Georgia fan. Georgia's playing in it. And I get a text message that this guy needs some help. He's in the La Quinta, and he's run out of money, and he can't get into a place until Monday, and he needs a place to stay for the weekend. And, well, I was available. I was available to take him around to meetings and be of service the best I could with no knowledge of what I was actually doing. So I asked for suggestions from all sorts of people and got all sorts of information, but when he got in the car with me, the thing I started doing is I just started telling him my story. All the worthless stuff that I didn't think was of any use to anybody. And he kept dipping his head lower towards the floorboard of my car, and I was quite certain he was going to get sick. But he just kept dipping. As I kept going, I finished my story, and I said, "Now tell me your story." And he says, "I don't need to. You just told it to me." I really wonder what my life would have been like if I didn't have the willingness to just go pick that guy up. I don't know. I don't keep track of the number of guys that have asked me to be their sponsor and that I've attempted to take through the steps. Some of them have finished, some of them haven't. The ones that have finished, I would say the good number of those guys have gone out and carried the message to somebody else in their very specific way. It's interesting to watch guys that I sponsor start sponsoring other people because they start sponsoring them just the way that I sponsored them. And a year or so later, I see that they've crafted their art and now they sponsor the way that they sponsor. Because here's the really, really cool thing is that how you are, your personality and your makeup, exactly how you are, is the most effective you there is. It's not Brandon, it's not Tarek, it's not Bill, it's not Roscoe. It's you. When you're in alignment with the true you, who you are absolutely the most effective person on the planet. The problem is that most of us run around in our lives and we have no idea who we really are, so we're ineffective. The process of the 12 steps breaks down who we are to help us understand how to be the most effective us. And then as we start to get success with the most effective us, we start to gain confidence and we start to tweak and change and morph and move and learn and pass on these things, and we find out the things that work and the things that don't. And before you know it, you're sponsoring an army of guys. I've sponsored but tempted to sponsor 4 or 5 family members of people I know. The first guy that attempted to take me through the steps, I've taken him back through the steps, and he had 35 years at the time. The first guy that took me through the steps, I'm now his sponsor. I don't know how this happens, and none of what I'm telling you is from this place of, look how good I am. It's not. It's, I have learned how to become an effective Brandon. That's it. People call me for advice. I usually tell them a story, because Brandon's most effective way of giving them advice is to tell them a story and let them come to the conclusion that they need to get to. A girl asked me a question one time about whether or not she should take a job, and I told her a story, and she looked at me and she goes, "What the fuck am I supposed to do with that?" And my buddy Nathan's walking by, and I said, "Nathan, how do I give advice?" And he goes, "Oh, he gives you some Yoda shit, tells you a story, and expects you to figure it out." She called me the next day and said, "Thank you, I figured it out." That's how I do it. That's my style. It's not Tarek's style, it's not other people's style. That's what I do. I can't tell you how many times I'm in the middle of an insignificant event and a guy on my network will call me and have an issue. I'll tell them the story about what's going on in my life and they're like, "I get it, thanks." I'm like, "What did I do?" "I don't know." But that's how I have learned to work with the universe. You'll find your own way. And it's not going to be my way. It's going to be your way. And that will make you the most effective you. And then when you start to do that and you start to see the people transform in your life, it's impossible to not get excited about this. It's impossible. Your speaker last night, Zach, he had left just before Tarek and I did our first one here, but the three guys that came with him were here for the first one. Now, that's fascinating to me that people left here, went out, and I get to observe them in their life, and those guys are out there sponsoring. And they're having their lives transformed, and they're getting relationships and jobs and talking to their families that disown them, right? You want to see the restorative power of God, watch the people in your life and participate in their life. It is absolutely the coolest thing you will ever experience. I have kids. I love watching my kids grow and become adults, young adults, and them morph and change. But it's a really slow process when you're watching your kids. When I'm sponsoring, I may see a person grow decades in 2, 3, 4 months. Their life completely change in that short window. Maybe that's fascinating to you. It is to me. It excites the hell out of me.
Thanks, Brandon. Good morning. I'm Tarek. I'm an addict.
Tarek.
You guys turn to the forward to the second edition for me. It's the second page, right?
It would be XVI.
Okay, XVI at the bottom. About 8 lines down, right before the bottom, it says, "This seemed to prove the two alcoholics together, just seemed to prove that one alcoholic can affect another as no non-alcoholic can, or one addict can affect another as no non-addict can. It also indicates that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, one addict with another, is vital to permanent recovery." So they're telling me there that this work I'm about to embark on with other addicts and alcoholics is strenuous work, and it is also the work. So a lot of us think that we're going through a process at the bridges, or I'm being taken through the steps by someone, and I'm in the work. You know, I think it's a half-truth. The real work is once you've been through the steps, you've gone through the, what I call the prep work, and now it's time to sit down and sacrifice your personal time and show someone else how to work the steps. That, to me, is the real work. The sacrifice that is involved, you know, I'll use Brandon as an example, married, has four kids, and sponsors a lot of guys. That's a sacrifice, because he doesn't have a lot of free time to squeeze those sessions in, but he still makes it happen. There are a lot of days where I work a long day at work, and I've got a sponsor coming over to my house at 7 o'clock at night, which means he's probably going to be there at about 9, 9:30, and I got to get up again the next day. This happens to me a handful of times every week, between 3 to 5 times a week. Is this something you're willing to do? Because I think it's required of us if we want permanent recovery. Turn to page 14 for me. Three lines up from the bottom. Faith without works is dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic and the addict. For if an alcoholic or an addict fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and sacrifice for others, he will not survive the certain, promised trials and low spots ahead. If he does not work, he will surely get high or drink. And if he gets high or drinks again, he's surely going to die. Then faith would be dead indeed with us, as it is just like that. So right there, they tell me that's the work in Alcoholics Anonymous and all these other 12-step fellowships, is work and self-sacrifice for others. That's how I grow spiritually. Part of how I grow spiritually. Okay, turn to page 89. Practical experience, my own personal experience, has shown me that nothing will ensure immunity from drinking and getting high as intensive work with other alcoholics and addicts. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to alcoholics and addicts. The message is the way of life described in the first 164 pages of the Big Book. That is the AA message. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill or sick. And this is a promise. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. You know, this is my first sponsor. This is one of, he told me this at least once a week when I was asking a question. He would say, "Tarek, if I had an orange in my hand right now, and I was smelling the orange and I was describing the smell to you, and then I began to peel the orange and I described the texture to you, and then I cracked the orange open and I smelled it and I tasted the juice and I tried to describe that to you, and then I took a bite out of my orange and tried to describe that to you, you wouldn't quite understand what I was describing. I would just be using my words to give you an idea. But until you get your own orange and you touch it and you peel it and you smell it and you taste it, you're not going to quite understand what we're talking about here." I don't know why that story imprinted the way it did, but what it showed me is I had to have my own experience to test and find out if what these guys are talking about is actually true. See, what the human mind and the egoic mind does is it'll convince you that you know something's not true when you've never tried it. Or you put 50% effort in a half measure and didn't get the full results, but you're expecting full results from 50% effort. That's not the world that we live in. Page 128. This is talking about the father who's become spiritually intoxicated and the family's a little frustrated. But maybe we should let these men and women who are excited about the sponsorship aspect of things to have their head for a little while, to have their fun. The book says any recovery that doesn't circle back and include the family is no recovery at all. But in the beginning, we need to be excited about the sponsorship aspect of things. So on the bottom of page 28, he says, you know, he's talking about father is not so unbalanced as they might think. Many of us have experienced dad's elation. We have indulged in spiritual intoxication. Like a gaunt prospector, belt drawn in over the last ounce of food, our pitch struck gold. Frustration knew no bounds. Father feels he struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he's barely scratched a limitless load which will pay dividends only if he mines it for the rest of his life and insists on giving away the entire product. It's probably one of my favorite, if not my favorite, passage in this book. Let's turn the page. 130. Those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We've come to believe He would like us to keep our head in the clouds with Him, and our feet ought to be firmly planted on earth. This is where our fellow travelers are. This is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. There's that word, usefulness. And earlier in the paragraph, they said sense of purpose. And then they talk about keeping our feet on the ground, our head up in the clouds and our feet on the ground. One of the things I learned from Scott was, you know, he taught me that through steps 10 and 11, and through looking at that one sentence on page 87, I believe, be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer and go have some fun and investigate and get curious. I can keep my head in the clouds. But my feet have to be firmly planted on the ground, and that is the 12-step work. It keeps me grounded, keeps me centered. Well, this is why do we have 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of service? I think they really all flow into the fifth tradition. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the alcoholic or addict who still suffers. And that could be with, you know, still drinking, just stop drinking or using, and maybe been clean and sober for a while. They all fall under that. We have a message to carry. We have a responsibility to carry. But all we ever hear in the rooms is, oh, the newcomer is the most important person. No, it's not true. And he's no more important than the person out there carrying the 12-step, carrying the message. If the newcomer is the blood, right, the blood of our program, the lifeblood. Well, blood has to have a heart to pump through. And it's the guys and gals out there that are carrying this message that are that heart. They're the ones that complete the circle. Without a 12-stepper, you'd have no real recovery. You guys do realize that, right? So there's no way the newcomer can be the most important person in the room. So, sorry, I didn't burst your bubble. But that's just something I've been taught that I believe. But you know, I am convinced, because I am a believer of the connectedness of all things in this universe, that all of my personal and professional success in life over these past 11 years is directly correlated somehow to some degree with the amount of time I have sacrificed to sponsor people through the 12 steps. I fell in love with it at a very, very early in my recovery, and I never looked back. And I still, you know, this comes into my mind a lot when I had those 5 months, and I went over to this program in Atlanta called Hope Homes, and they're a halfway house out of apartments, and there was this guy I had met him at a meeting. He wanted me to take him through the steps. And I went over there, and we sat down in his dining room, and I was sitting across from him at a table. And I remember he had just gotten there. He'd just gotten out of detox, so he had about a week clean. And I sat across the table from him, and I witnessed myself at a week clean. Like I said to myself, I don't know why this imaginative thought came into my mind, but this is what I was like. And what was reinforced is I don't want to ever go back. I don't ever want to be like this guy is right now. And that was what connected me to what I was like. And that's what sponsorship does. It's constantly taking us back. Man, I remember those days. I want nothing to do with it. And this is why a lot of people, I believe, don't stay clean and sober. They never get active in this part of our program. But I needed, like, in order to have, for our memories, to be able to bring them into our consciousness with sufficient force, that's never done by willful thinking or cognitive thinking. It's always done by someone, like it's triggering something in me when I see a new guy. It's like a collection of like thoughts that come out of this floodgate when I'm sitting with a new person, especially when I sit across from like a crackhead. You know, I get some of the drama associated with addiction and alcoholism comes to me when I'm sitting across the table from a cocaine addict. And they start telling me what's going on, and they got about a week, I'm instantly teleported back in time. I'm like, wow, I don't want anything to do with it. And that to me is the magic of it. But it's not the most powerful aspect of it. There's this phenomenon that happens when you start sponsoring people, and they stay clean and sober. And then you walk into that first clubhouse or that at the church, and you see one of your sponsees, and he's working with a guy. All right. And then a few months later, the sponsee of your sponsee is working with a guy. It's incredible. It can't be described with words. It's something you like that rushes over you. That's pretty amazing. And so I tend to become a part of the regenerative Brandon referred to it as restorative power of God. When you're in the process with somebody and you watch someone change, and there can be no explanation for the change other than the power of a God of some capacity. And that to me has been intoxicating. So, I've been blessed and sponsored a lot of people through these 12 steps and developed some really strong relationships around sponsorship. And there are just some individuals that draw my awareness to God when I see them a lot. It may not happen every single time, but it happens very often. All right? I remember Brandon Brandon was taken through the steps by a buddy, by a guy I sponsored. This guy decided to leave. Brandon comes to me. I said, okay, I need to listen to your fifth step. So we started there, moved forward, and we've been working together ever since. But fortunately for me, sponsorship is not this, the idea of a sponsor always being a teacher and the sponsee always being a student just doesn't work for me. So a lot of the guys I've sponsored for a long time have become my peers, and they've also become teachers to a degree, because I defer to them at times, a handful of them. And that's a part that you also don't want to miss. It's one thing to be a leader and a captain, and you got your little squad of guys. I see those guys around Atlanta. They got the little minions running around with them. I don't want anything to do with that. I want to have boys, people that I respect, that I look at eye level, that I respect, that I am not in front of them. I don't want them to look up to me. That's not what I want. And I'm glad that it was taught to me that way. But this is the reason that the 12 steps came into existence. So, anybody here has anyone heard of Clarence Snyder? Does anyone know who Clarence Snyder is? Okay. Clarence Snyder, many believe, including himself, that he should have been considered the third co-founder. He should have been considered the third co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when AA started, you had the Oxford group in Akron, and then you had an Oxford group in New York, and they started writing the book around 1937. There was about 40 of them. By the time it's over, they're said to be somewhere between 80 and 100, most of those being in Akron. Now, at the time, Clarence Snyder was sponsored by Dr. Bob, and at some point in the late 30s, there was this rift between the Protestants and the Catholics within AA. I guess the Oxford group didn't want the Catholics coming to their meetings and vice versa. And Clarence Snyder went to Dr. Bob and said, "This is ridiculous. We're all alcoholics. It doesn't matter what religion or what church we belong to. A group of us are going to break away from the Oxford group, and we're going to go to Cleveland, and we're going to start a new meeting. And we're going to start a new group." And they didn't know what to call the group. And he just said, "Okay, let's call our group, let's name it after the book." The book had come out, 1939. He said, "Let's call ourselves an Alcoholics Anonymous group." That first one was started in Cleveland, I think in like 1940. And Clarence Snyder was a big proponent of using the big book as a tool in sponsorship. That didn't come from New York or Akron. It came out of Cleveland, as his biography says it. And shortly thereafter, we've got hundreds of people sober in Cleveland. And they're rocking and they're rolling. And so he wrote an AA sponsorship pamphlet. I just want to read a little bit out of it, and I want to just give you the headings of what he stressed. "Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is a potential sponsor of a new member and should clearly recognize the obligations and duties of such responsibility. The acceptance of an opportunity to take the AA plan to a sufferer of alcoholism entails very real, critically important responsibilities. Each member undertaking the sponsorship of a fellow alcoholic must remember that he is offering what is frequently the last chance of rehabilitation, sanity, and maybe life itself. Happiness, health, security, sanity, and life of human beings are the things we hold in balance when we sponsor an alcoholic. No member among us is wise enough to develop a sponsorship program that can be successfully applied in every case. In the following pages, however, we have outlined a suggested procedure which, supplemented by the member's own experience, has been proven successful." This was written in 1944. "No one reaps full benefit from any fellowship he is connected with unless he wholeheartedly engages in its important activities. The expansion of Alcoholics Anonymous to wider fields of greater benefit to more people results directly from the addition of new, worthwhile members and associates. Any AA who has not experienced the joys and satisfaction of helping another alcoholic regain his place in life has not fully realized the complete benefits of this fellowship. On the other hand, it must be clearly kept in mind that the only possible reason for bringing an alcoholic into AA is for that person's gain. Sponsorship should never be undertaken to increase the size of the group, for personal satisfaction and glory, because the sponsor feels that it is his duty to remake the world. Until an individual has assumed the responsibility of setting a shaking, helpless human being back on the path toward becoming a healthy, useful, happy member of society, he has not enjoyed the complete thrill of being an AA." And then he goes on to go through and talk about how you find out if the prospect is a candidate by qualifying, who should become members. You present the plan of action. You talk about the suggested steps. You qualify yourself as an alcoholic. You tell the prospect your story. You inspire confidence. You talk about the values that can be brought into your life as a result of taking the AA through the steps. You show the importance of reading the big book over and over and putting into practical application the tools you find in the book. The qualities that are required for success in AA in terms of what Clarence thought. You talk about faith. Then you listen to his story. You take him to several meetings. You explain to the AA's family what's going on, and you tell him to anticipate the hospital experience of like going to detox and sitting next to a guy and talking to him. And then you consult older members in AA about how you're sponsoring somebody. A lot of that sounds pretty familiar, at least for us in our lineage. That a lot of this stuff has been shared to some degree with me over the years. It's a craft. Sponsorship is a craft, and you only hone and polish your craft by practice, 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 practice. But when you're new and you take on a sponsee, you got someone's life in your hands, and you should be talking to your sponsor, especially in those first few cases. "Hey, I'm on my way to meet a sponsee. This is what we're covering tonight." If he calls you with a question you don't have an answer to, you need to call my sponsor. I mean, these are important things. I don't know if anyone's ever discussed any of this with you. And Brandon and I could probably sit up here and do an entire day on just this stuff. But we're not going to. We're just trying to throw little nuggets at you.
I have sponsees of sponsees. Let's see. Sponsees of sponsees who are sponsoring. So my sponsees, sponsee, sponsee, that contact me about questions because they feel like I have more information or the other people in between us aren't available. If you don't know who your sponsor is and have had a conversation with them, you need to. Because that's where you start to understand the connection of things. That's where you start to understand the importance of things. Because so many people, you ask, I'll ask people, who's your sponsor? And they'll say, so-and-so. And I'm like, oh, I don't know them. Who sponsors them? I don't know. So guys, it's just your life. You think it's important that you should know where your doctor was trained that's having brain surgery on you? Was it out of the back of a pickup truck, or is it a reputable institution? Because that's what we're talking about here.
I mean, there's incompetent sponsorship and there's competent sponsorship. That's a reflection of the real world. There's good meetings based on a magical combination of fellowship and program. There are meetings that I don't think are worth a crap that are just completely based on fellowship. It's a magical combination of the two. But someone needs to educate you on that process. So I think that we, as sponsors, our responsibility is to spoon feed our sponsees the program of recovery little by little so they know what their responsibilities are. And if we can do that, you're going to tap the jewel of this program, truly, I believe, is in sponsorship. And so I found this a couple of years ago, and I always relate it to sponsorship. It says Moses said to his household, "Verily, beyond all doubt, I have seen a fire. I will bring you tidings of it, or I will bring you a flame brand so you can warm yourself." In every esoteric doctrine, there are references to three degrees of faith. In one tradition, these three degrees are known as the lore of certainty. Now, a lore is like a story. The eye of certainty and the truth of certainty. The difference between them is illustrated by taking the element fire to represent the divine truth. The lowest degree, that of the lore of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of the fire comes merely from hearing it described, like those who received from Moses no more than tidings of the burning bush. The second degree, that of the eye of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of fire comes from seeing the light of its flames, like those who were shown a firebrand. The highest degree, that of the truth of certainty, belongs to one whose knowledge of fire comes from being burned in it. This ultimate possibility is represented in the above verse by the direct experience of those who are allowed to warm themselves at the fire. But the word used here is in itself to the full range of possibility of experiencing the fire directly and could be translated apart from its literal context that ye may be consumed. The fire is sponsorship, guys. You hear people that have been around for a while who have only sponsored when it's convenient. I have been amazed over the years by the number of the individuals I've met with double-digit sobriety years that have never sponsored anyone. It's amazing.
Or they've made themselves available, or they've been a sponsor in name. That's it.
And so I feel like they just didn't tap the jewel. They didn't tap the reservoir. I mean, that's what everything's about, as far as I'm concerned. But they all heard stories, right? They all heard stories. Oh, so-and-so sponsors a bunch of guys, and I see all kinds of crazy things going on, and I hear wonderful stories about him and the activities that he's engaged in the fellowship. And so you hear, that individual hears everything through a story. Then you got those that show up at the clubhouse or at the church, and they always see someone else with their sponsee doing some step work, sitting off in the corner or sitting in a room. And then you've got this other collection of people that are actually engaged in the process. They're being consumed by the flames. And so we always do this thing where we refer to somebody, he's on fire, right? And every time I've ever said he's on fire, I would venture to say he's been active. He has just gotten active in sponsorship. 9 times out of 10. I can't say every single time I've ever said that because I can't remember. So I'm going to give myself a little cushion. But 9 times out of 10, if I say so-and-so's on fire, he's just recently got active in sponsorship and he's got bit by the bug. And that's what we wanted to do this weekend, was to somehow do our best to excite you about the program of recovery outlined in the big book.
Would you say that out of the guys that have gone through your program, the ones that you would consider truly successful and on fire and really rearranging their life have all gotten involved in sponsorship? I'm trying to think of the guys that have gone through your stuff and all the ones that I would say that, like, holy crap, that guy's life is completely transforming. They all have gotten involved in sponsorship. And the ones that their life seems better, but they're just kind of, it's almost like you're just waiting for it. You're just waiting for the failure to happen. Because they're not involved in sponsorship. They're not active. They're not out there moving and growing. And it's so easy to see when you're on the outside looking at it, knowing where they've been, why they're experiencing what they're experiencing. But when you've not experienced it, well, it's conceptual, I guess.
Yeah. So you can either hear stories about it, you can see others do it, or you can get in it. Get, as my sponsor says, get in the game. Right? This is a game. I mean, I guess all teams, they have their starting lineup, and they've got their bench warmers, and they've got the people that are just, you know, I guess you call them, what are those people called that just travel with the team and cheer on the sideline and
groupies,
never really put on the
fans?
Uniform? Not the fans, but the people that are part of the team that just sort of never play.
Equipment manager?
Yeah.
You got to carry all the heavy shit around, but you don't actually get to do anything?
And so as my sponsor says, get in the goddamn game. Do you want to sit on the sideline or do you want to get in the game? We got enough people sitting on the sidelines, folks. I encourage you to get in the game. You know, I played a lot of athletics and I started a lot. That mentality has followed me in here. So,
you have a question?
Yeah. Whenever y'all first started, y'all had that question about should you wait a year to sponsor, and obviously it would imply that you shouldn't. But then I've also heard that when you first get a sponsor, you should get one with more than a year. So how do you?
Depends.
Do I know that? I've had a bunch of sponsors that, and that didn't have a year, and that was what I was told that where
okay.
I made the mistake.
I was 90 days sober when I got the guy that was the first guy that was equipped to take me through the steps. He was 60 days sober. He had 1 month less than me. He took me all the way up to step 11. He checked out. I stayed. And then I had 3 sponsors that I was interviewing. Tarek was one of them. He was my last choice. I wanted the other 2 guys, but they weren't really living this way of life. And so I just kind of defaulted to Tarek. That's really what happened. And you think that God didn't have a play in that? Absolutely. Because, like, he's the guy I was supposed to be with.
So you don't think it was a mistake that I chose people that didn't have a year? It was just bad.
I think God picks sponsors.
Okay.
And so there are guys that go through Tarek's program that there are other programs around the city of Atlanta. When they find out that the guy's only got, you know, 90 days of sobriety, they tell him that they can't sponsor him. But there are people that I know that have a month of sobriety that have, like, really caught fire that I would rather entrust one of my kids to than some of the people that have got 20, 30 years out there, because it's the connection to source. It's the connection to power. Okay? I'll be honest. I'll be a little suspect of anybody that, like, if somebody I know goes to a guy and he's got less than 6 months, I'm suspect unless I know who that guy's sponsor is. And so the key is to know the network that they're involved in. And if it's one of the guys that's closely connected to my network and he's only got 3 months, I'm like, hell yeah, that guy's awesome. So, I mean, think about it. Ebby Thatcher, the guy that carried the message to Bill, was 2 months sober. Okay? Bill was 6 months sober when he had his first successful person in Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob was 2 weeks sober when he carried the message to Bill Dodson. This idea that we need to wait a year or a bunch of time, if we did, we would all be dead.
Gotcha.
Because the message, when a person's on fire, they need to be out there doing it. I mean, you need to be at least multiple steps ahead of the guy that you're going to sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Probably be making amends just because you've been armed with the facts about yourself in steps 4 and 5. But when you have a network of people around you, I mean,
he's hit the nail on the head there. I mean, a sponsor's responsibility is to guide you through the mechanics of working steps. But you can't place your dependence on your sponsor. You have to have there's a network at first as you're feeling your way through the 12 steps. Go ahead.
But I was just thinking, so there's a lot of guys that are sponsees of my sponsees that may have, what does Ryan have?
Ryan's got 4 months.
4 months. And he's already got a guy in the fourth step. And Ryan's calling me about this guy. The guy's calling me. I was texting with him yesterday. He's sending me his column 4. He's like, does this look right? I'm like, looks great. So he knows that he can go up to, and it's not you're going over somebody's head. It's just your life, you know. I mean, is it important for you to consult with your sponsor if you think that it's going to benefit you saving your life? So there's no right answer, but all right, so my gauge, this is Brandon's gauge. This is when I'm spiritually fit, okay? There have been periods in my sobriety where I wasn't praying, I wasn't meditating, I wasn't making amends, I wasn't doing the things that I needed to be doing, and I would say that I wasn't spiritually fit. How that showed up for me is I looked around and I didn't have any sponsees. Anytime I'm spiritually fit, I've got more guys that I can take on. People are constantly asking me and I'm flipping them to guys that I sponsor. Or, really, this really happens. It seems like nobody will ask me for a really long time to sponsor them. And then I'll have a guy ask me on a Sunday, and I'll be like, I don't know when I'll have time to work with you. All my slots are filled. And on Monday, a guy either relapses or fires me, and I call the guy that called me on Sunday and said, I got space for you now. I've been fired by sponsees the day after being asked by a new guy, I think 3 or 4 times in sobriety. It's fascinating to me. It's like the universe already knows what's going to happen.
Does that answer your question? Yeah. All of that?
Yeah.
This jogged my memory when you said, you can't place dependence upon your sponsor. The first 30-day chip I ever got said, think before you drink. The time to call your sponsor is before, not after. Like, I understand, like watered down, AA open discussion, but, how does that make it from the AA Central office?
Well, those chips are not produced by AA Central office.
They're not?
No. They're sold by AA Central office, but those chips are produced by individuals.
And that's the whole reason we lost the circle and triangle out of this big book. Because they had all these people that were producing all these chips and putting a circle and triangle on it. And AA was like, hold up, that's our symbol. You can't put it on there because we're not affiliated with any outside enterprises. So there was this struggle to go back and forth, and the case was about to go to court. And if I recall correctly, the attorney general in the state of New York wanted all of the AA members to release their last names if they were going to testify. And so there was this big deal about breaking anonymity. And as a group, they just decided we're just not going to fight for it. So and
they gave up the trademark on the circle and triangle. And so, I mean, those of you in here that are addicts, when people say call three people before you go get high, who are the three people that you're going to call? Dope man, maybe a hooker and a hotel, right? So this concept of call three people before you get high, you probably already did it, right? If you get to the place where you need to think before you drink and call your sponsor, you're probably already fucked.
Yeah.
Right? Is if I'm getting when the upset, I've seen it plenty of times, and I pray that I don't see it a bunch more. But when the obsession hits a guy and I see it and I'm talking through it, I start saying a prayer for the guy because I know there's no way he's not going out. When the obsession hits, it's too late. That's why we're so passionate about working these steps, guys, is because you think, well, okay, when it gets bad enough, when the obsession gets bad enough, then I'll start meditating. Too late. You're fucked by that. Mike?
Yeah, is there, say it to my friend, your first meeting with someone, is there a certain amount of information you would go through, or is it more of a filling out process depending on how receptive they are? You know, if your first initial meeting with someone, want to try to get them going, or
Your question's clear.
Yeah, I got it. Turn to page 94. My first meeting with a potential sponsee, I've got a few things I'm going to do after I'm convinced that they're an alcoholic and or a drug addict. So I've qualified them, and I've told them parts of my story. So now they know that I understand. Those are two things that happen. Then I ask them, you know, I usually do that at the church, if they ask me at the church, and sometimes I'll take them into a side room, or I'll meet them for a cup of coffee. And I do what's on page 94. I outline the program of action. I explain how I made a self-appraisal, how I straightened out my past, and why I'm now endeavoring to be helpful to them. That is a narrative of the 12 steps. So if I'm going to sponsor someone, they need to know what that's going to look like. And so I give them, if you and I are going to work together, here's how we're going to walk through these steps. So it takes about 10 to 15 minutes to do a little narrative of the steps. I tell most guys, not all of them, but most of them over the recent past, you're going to call me every day until I tell you otherwise. I don't care if I pick up the phone or not. You can leave a voicemail. And I'll tell you when you can stop calling me. All right, that's mandatory. They're going to have to come to my Monday or Thursday night home group unless they have a work schedule that does not allow it. Otherwise, I will lay my eyes on them. And they have to meet with me at least once a week for about an hour and a half to 2.5 hours, depending on what part of the book we're in. Those are non-negotiable, period. And then I start introducing them to people after that. And I'll continue doing what this paragraph says. It's important for that person to realize that my attempt to pass this on to them is a vital part of my own recovery, and actually, me sitting down with them is helping me more than it's helping them. I always throw that in there somewhere. I tell them, me trying to help you right now is helping me more than it's helping you. That's what, you know, I try to just give them as many slivers of golden nuggets as I can at the very beginning to sort of foreshadow what's possible for them. But this page is really important. This is what I do in the initial meeting. I don't jump right into the book because when we leave that meeting, let's say I was meeting with someone right now. It's 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. I say, hey, hit me up on Tuesday by 10 o'clock. Tuesday morning, let me know if you want to do what I just described. Tell me you're ready to go through with this program of action. Sometimes I get a phone call at 10 o'clock on Tuesday, and sometimes I don't. I just save myself a world of time.
And I can't tell you how many guys, when I'm sitting down with them, laying it out like that, they're like, yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it right now. Like, they are absolutely convinced they're ready to go. Never hear from the guy.
Yes.
So you were talking about people that you've seen in the room that are playing for significant period of time they've never sponsored anybody. Would you think that the majority of them are not real addicts or alcoholics?
Can't say. I don't have their experience. I don't know if they're real alcoholics or addicts. There's a pretty good chance, based on what I've observed, that they're a type 1 or type 2. and that the meetings are adequate for them to stay sober. We didn't say this. It's important, like, when you listen to your sponsor's story, if he just drank 10 Coors Lights on Friday nights and then went home and put it to bed, and then when you start talking about some of the drinking that you do, and he looks at you, dude, why you drink so much? Get somebody else. Because there are people that attempt to sponsor that are not real ones, not type 3, type 4. And if you get hooked up with a sponsor that's really confused with your story, this is a big reason why a lot of alcoholics are not equipped to sponsor addicts. Because some of the stuff that addicts do to an alcoholic is just like, whoa, like, why are you doing all that stuff, right? Because, addicts do some crazy ass shit when they were on a run, right? And so if an addict gets an alcoholic as a sponsor, a lot of the alcoholics can't help it. They're just going to be judgmental of the experience of the addict. And so I will absolutely admit that probably for the first 2 years I would have been one of those guys. But I've been around enough people that I understand, after listening to enough Fist Steps, I understand the plight of the addict a lot more than most alcoholics do. But I'm still going to try to flip a guy to another like-minded, like, I'll send Tarek texts all the time. Who's our resident pill popper? Who's our resident, I know who the heroin addicts are. And so, like, when somebody's got, does Roxy's or something else, we've got a guy that's got that exact same experience in our network. It's more effective to hook them up because they know the deal. So, does that answer your question? We had one more over here.
Yeah, I just want to go back and thank you guys. You clarified something that I had often questioned when we were talking about the length of time, sobriety time maybe the sponsor would have. The first thing I always thought, and even this morning, was they'll know to 2 or 3 months, because just like anything else, there's no credibility there, no credibility, track record, or experience. And I hear a lot of that when we talk amongst ourselves. There's concern about that. If we get somebody sponsors, it's just a few months ahead of us. But when you pointed out, it's the quality of the upline. Mm-hmm. I've got a guy that sponsored me. I think he's got Bill Brown is his sponsor. He's probably got a couple of months now of clean time. He's had some time before. But the reason I wasn't hesitant about letting him sponsor me is because I know all the information is coming straight from somebody who has one
right.
Confidence.
So it's important.
I
mean, yeah.
And I was just hoping everybody else really heard that. A guy with 2 or 3 months might not be the guy to sponsor you, but a guy with 2 or 3 months being sponsored
by somebody that's legit, right? Like, I'll tell you, like, our buddy over here, Davey, who I can vouch for, who's got between 6 and 7 months, somewhere in there. These guys in the front row can probably relate to Davey's experience a hell of a lot better than me being in between 6 and 7 years, because he's been there closer. So it's a lot of the times it's kind of counterintuitive. The guy with less time may be more effective with the new guy than somebody that has more time. Yeah, I got more tricks and stuff like that, and more angles to come at it, but sometimes the new guy can't hook up with the fact that I've been where he is. Because you look at my life right now, and it looks like it's kind of always been pretty awesome the way it is now. That hasn't been the case, but to a new person, they don't necessarily believe that. There are other people that need the person with the put-together life in order for them to believe that this experience works. So, again, I think God picks sponsors. There's people that get hooked up all the time where I think it's kind of a goofy connection, and they have an incredible relationship, and I'm like, oh, well, who knows? The doctor that's sponsored by the guy that flips burgers, sometimes that's incredible, because that doctor maybe has this ego that needs to be crushed and needs to be sponsored by somebody who's getting an hourly wage, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know why people get hooked up the way that they do, but it's fascinating to watch.
I got a guy that just went through my program. Brandon here sponsored him. He was sponsoring at, 60 days? He was sponsoring other guys outside of my program. The guys don't sponsor within my program. They go out to the community. He was sponsoring people. At 6 months, another program hired him as a recovery coach. And when they interviewed people, he was the only one under a year they interviewed, but yet he had more recovery under his belt than all the people that they interviewed that had multiple, like a year and a half, and they interviewed another guy with 2 years. There's something goes to just the experience of having worked the steps and you're active in sponsorship will speak volumes. You know, I've had conversations with people that are very mature in the 12 steps and sponsorship, and I would have been like, damn, he's only got a year? And I would have thought he had like 4 or 5 years based on how much experience and the way he was talking. It just depends. You can't. Time is a horrible measuring stick for quality. It just is. It's just not the same. You can't use it. I mean, I got fired. I can't tell you how many sober living programs found out I had under a year when I was early trying to sponsor people, and they would make the people that had asked me to sponsor them fire me. And I kept running into them because I started sponsoring. I mean, I had 4 months when I started sponsoring people. So, you know, my goal when I sponsor someone through the steps is they need to be on step 9, making amends and sponsoring people in 90 days. And usually I'm under the 90. That's how quickly I got to get them through the process, because we're working on borrowed time, really, before that obsession comes back and before the liar's voice reasserts itself on the scene and starts to convince you of things that just are not true. Any more questions?
I got a question. It's kind of off topic, though. I get confused with, like, Dr. Bonner. On page 181, it says, unlike most of our crowd, I do not get over my cravings and drinking much during the first 2.5 years of abstinence. It was almost always with me. Like, I don't, like, to me in my head, I don't know if that conflicts with the 10-step promises. But, like,
okay, so even though it's Dr. Bob, the stories in the back are one individual's point of view. The 164 pages is the collective consciousness of all the people that were sober at that time. I don't particularly use the stories in the back of the book as a measuring or gauge for what somebody should do in sobriety or not do in sobriety, because that wasn't the group conscience. Okay? Even though it's Dr. Bob and he's one of the founders, I revert back to what the recovery portion of the book talks about. Okay, Dr. Bob's story also says that he's cured. Bill Dotson, alcoholic number 3, also says he's cured. The 164 says that we're not cured of alcoholism. What we have is a daily reprieve. So there's all sorts of goofy stuff in some of the stories in the back. I'll just go up right ahead and say there's a lot of stuff that I disagree with. I believe there's a lot of editing to the stories that are in the back, and I personally think that I've connected some of the stories that have been edited based on some historical information. Clarence Snyder admits that the first story that he put in, I think the first edition, he wrote to make his wife come back, right? So what was the motive behind the story when the person wrote the story? Was it to try to get in the big book? We don't know. And so they're entertaining, just like a speaker from a podium is entertaining, but to me, that's not the program, okay? So the fact that he says he had those cravings, craving to me, according to the doctor's opinion, is what happens to me when I put it into my body. I may have a mental obsession, which what Dr. Bob explains in his story to me is a mental obsession, but when a guy tells me that the obsession's on him, I like to ask him and really grill him, because a lot of the time what somebody says is the obsession is I'm having thoughts of drinking. Okay? That's not an obsession. An obsession's like, that's all I can think about. Like, in between drinks, everything, like, I'm fully consumed, it's on me, I'm swimming in the idea that I want to get drunk. That's the obsession.
You said something when you asked your question, you said it confuses me with the position of neutrality on page 85. And the position of neutrality and the problem being removed, to me, has a connection with this illusion that we ever had a choice. And to I'm willing to bet for Dr. Bob, even though he struggled with thoughts of drinking, he didn't drink. So on some level, at some point, he recoiled as if from a hot flame, and he did observe a position of neutrality, and the problem had been removed for him, because even though he struggled with the quote-unquote craving, he did not drink. So, does that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
Ask questions, guys. I mean, like, if you start asking questions of your sponsor and they can't answer them, and they can't point you to the person that can answer them, or they start giving you some bullshit that sounds right, but you don't, in your spirit, you know is not right, you probably need to get a new sponsor. Okay? There's a lot of people that are very reluctant to say that from where I'm sitting. I say it's probably time to get a new sponsor a lot to people, because it's just your life. No big deal, right? So to me, it's a little more important that you get hooked up with the right person.
Yes.
I'm curious, first of all, if I wrote this down correctly, in the first session, and I wrote down, and I apologize, I don't remember what Richard Bill said, I wrote down that if you relapse, you will never recover. Did I write that?
No. No. I think the statement I said was that if you have relapsed, you may not have been recovered before. Okay? So you can still recover. It's just, it was around the context of when a person wants to talk about their prior experience when they had 20 years or 10 years or 5 years and they've relapsed. My point is that was corrupted. That experience was corrupted. So, you don't use that as your measuring stick for whether or not you should do that again. Don't do whatever you did before. It didn't work. Do something different is kind of the message I was trying to convey. So, no, thank you for clarifying. I would much rather you clarify something like that than walk around like thinking that you're doomed forever. Yeah.
So, I want to thank all of you for being attentive, for the wonderful questions and the wonderful conversations over the course of the weekend. We've done our best to give you an adequate presentation of the program. We've also done our best to share with you what we think what any length looks like. These are the lengths that Brandon and I go to have our daily reprieve, so to speak. So I want to thank you very much, and I'll turn it over to Brandon.
In Dr. Bob's Nightmare, there are some parts that I do like to refer to, and, because today is June 10th. In the beginning, right after the title of this thing, it says, "A co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, the birth of our society dates from his first day of permanent sobriety, June 10, 1935. To 1950, the year of his death, he carried the AA message to more than 5,000 alcoholic men and women. And to all these, he gave his medical services without thought of charge." Okay, so because I do this kind of thing, I did the math on that. 5,000 people in 15 years is 333 a year, which means that he was taking somebody through the steps every day and took a month off. Okay. I think a lot of people get very... That seems very daunting when you're new of like, am I really going to have to do this stuff all the time? But I ask you, how much time did you spend recovering from your last run, planning your next one, getting your stuff, and actively in your run? And I think if you look at it, if I really consider how that showed up for me, it was a good 14 to 16 hours a day that was in some combination of that. So the amount of time that I spend, usually probably 3 to 5 hours on average a day in service to other people, is really small compared to what I used to do for alcohol. Okay? Dr. Bob says at the end of a story, if you think you're an atheist, agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what is in this book, I feel sorry for you. You still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone? That is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking liquor and using drugs for good and all, and sincerely feel that you must have some help, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing when you were getting another drink or drug. One half. That's it. And then the fancy thing that'll happen is that you'll actually get lit by this fire, get bit by this bug, and you'll actually have a desire to do it for the rest of your life. If you don't find that desire, if you don't get connected to that, you're not going to stay. You're just not. And there's so much that I now understand about life that I never understood, and there's so many more questions for me to continue to explore. And still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be especially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Not many of us can be leaders of prominence, nor do we wish to be. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help, the knowledge that at home or in the world outside we are partners in a common effort, the well-understood fact that in God's sight all human beings are important, the proof that love freely given surely brings a full return, the certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons, the surety that we need no longer be square pegs and round holes, but can fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could be substituted. True ambition is not what we thought it was. True ambition is a deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. The last couple times that I've gotten to the end of one of these sessions, I've gotten very choked up at the realization of... I mean, especially today, you know, Dr. Bob and Bill got together and had this experience where they were freed from a lifetime of slavery to alcohol, right? And they worked really, really hard to come up with a practical program of action that they could transmit to somebody else. And they gave their lives to it. They weren't wealthy men. They could have been wealthy. They could have done so much more, but yet they did this. And then all those people that they passed it along to that were there when I showed up. So I know that when you end these things, there's the tendency to clap, maybe because you actually want to clap, or maybe because if you don't clap, the people give you the stink eye or something like that. But I mean this when I say it. Don't clap for me. Clap for Tarek for showing me the way, for Bill for putting this thing on, for for Roscoe and Bill carrying the message to you guys and making this place possible. Clap for all the people that came before you. That clap for Zach and Scott that were here and can prove to you guys that you can be here and go somewhere else and have a life. I'm just the conduit to deliver a message. That's it. And I hope and pray that one or two or five of you, because that's really all it's probably going to be, in this room will hear something, get excited about something, explore something that will make you desire to change your life in a way that will change the world, literally change the world. So thank you guys for being attentive. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all the forces in the universe that made you sit in the seats that you're in right now, because you have no idea what it took to get you here. And you have no idea where your life's going to go, but you've got two options. Go on to the bitter end, body out the intolerable existence as you've been living it. And then the fun way. It's up to you. So thanks.
Chief responsibility for the newcomers, an adequate presentation of the program. And man, that along with these guys cutting a piece of their life out for us this weekend, no offense, but that sounded like a Sunday morning clap. We give them Bridges 3 solid. Yeah! And circle up and let's bring it home.
Still get in here.
Come on.
Show in the middle.
Yeah.
Hey.
Come on, man.
I'm still looking through there. Hey, spread it out.
We gotta go in front, bro.
Just touch. We'll make it. Just touch.
Alright, guys, let's have a moment of silence at first for whatever it is you feel you need that moment of silence for. And in that moment, let's also remember why we're here. Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and glory, forever and ever.
Stay. Yeah.